Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We have a great guest. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
I'm Carmen DeVito.
And we are the ladies of Groundworks, Inc. We design, install, and maintain gardens around New York City. And we have a great old friend guest today talking about Fort Greene Park and the renovation of Fort Greene Park in Brooklyn. John and I worked, John Krawczuk is his name. Hello, John.
Hello, Alice and Carmen.
He's Hi. The Director of Historic Preservation for New York Parks and Rec. John and I worked on a Carnegie Library project in 1997, 1998, where we restored the landscape and invented a landscape. There was actually no landscape around one of the Carnegie public libraries in as part of Brooklyn Public Library. So we've been friends for a long time. He works in the capital projects department. He practices historic preservation in the public service sector, having spent much of his career in the municipal design sector. He's director of historic preservation for the City of New York Parks and Rec, where he facilitates capital preservation initiatives for parks, properties in all five boroughs. New York City Parks and Rec manages over 29,000 acres of parkland throughout the city.
That's a lot of land. I bet some developers would like to get their paws on that.
Yeah, well, let's keep them away.
We keep acquiring it from the developers, which is the good thing.
That's good. Really? I'm glad it's working in that direction.
That sounds like a whole other show.
Yes.
He facilitates archaeological investigations and environmental review on parks property. So he has a really fascinating, interesting job. Concerned with New York history, and that's actually where we worked on this library project in Fort Greene, Brooklyn. And again, we're back in Fort Greene for today's show, talking about Fort Greene Park, which is just half a block away from the library.
Correct.
Right.
The Walt Whitman Library.
Yeah. So John is a registered landscape architect with a Bachelor of Science in Landscape Architecture from California State Polytechnic University in Pomona. 1990 was his graduating date. And he holds a Master's of Science in Historic Preservation from Columbia University in 1995. And interestingly enough, a little bit of personal information, John was roommates with my prom date.
I think this is a conflict of interest.
Philip Palmgren.
Yeah. I think this is a conflict of interest here.
Right. I'm really just looking for Philip Palmgren again.
Will you please
He's
call
with Skidmore,
in?
Owings, Merrill.
Jack, will you give us that number again so Alice's prom date can call into this program?
No, actually, I do not want that to happen. John joined Parks in 1997 as a preservation project manager and was promoted to the position of director in 2002. He also serves as a member of the Conservation Advisory Group, the technical advisory body for the New York City Public Design Commission that reviews conservation and restoration projects for all city-owned works of art and miscellaneous urban structures.
That's correct.
He's played significant roles in a variety of restorations, namely Washington Square Park, which I think every New Yorker knows, Brooklyn's Fort Greene Park, which we're going to talk about today, and some more unusual resources like the New York State Pavilion, the Coney Island Carousel, and Pale Male's Fifth Avenue Nest.
Okay, wait a minute. I have to ask you about that briefly. What did you have to do with the nest?
Well, interestingly enough,
it wasn't positioned the right way on the windowsill.
Well, there was a slight controversy a number of years ago when the nest was disturbed. So Parks was called in, and my role was actually to advise on the landmarks components to installing a more permanent nest for Pale Male and his companions.
Oh, in case those of you who aren't from New York who don't know who Pale Male is, will you tell them who is Pale Male?
Well, Pale Male is one of the most famous hawks one of the most famous hawks in New York, actually.
Right. And he lives in Central Park.
And I think he got some pretty worldwide press, at the time, a number of years ago.
So you should know who Pale Male is.
Right.
Yeah.
So we helped design a new nest for him to attach to the building. So
I had to make sure we got
Landmark's approval for that.
He's okay with that nest now?
I think so. Yeah. Other than I think I don't know how successful he was reproducing in that nest. So I think he's moved on to other digs at this point.
I think that hawk probably has a better address and landing spot than most
New
Yorkers.
Better view.
The best real estate in the city. Okay, so let's talk about Fort Greene Park, right? The early history and the background. The history of present-day Fort Greene Park is very long and very layered. Can you give us some background on the historical genesis of the park, the changes over time, and the origins of its name?
Absolutely. Fort Greene Park in Brooklyn, New York, America's hometown, is really an amazing park, and I always love telling people about it because so many of the greats of landscape architecture actually worked on this park.
Right, it's kind of a who's who of...
Absolutely. You have Alexander Jackson Downing's influence initially when the park officially becomes a park in 1850. Then you have Olmsted and Vaux, the famous designers of Central Park, that designed Brooklyn's first park.
Right, Prospect Park.
Fort Greene Park. Often people do feel it's Prospect Park, but it's actually Fort Greene.
It's larger and more well-known.
Exactly. Well, it is their great masterpiece, Prospect Park. But first they worked on this park, which was Fort Greene Park. So we had their involvement. And then later in the 20th century, we have the firm of McKim, Mead & White, specifically Stanford White, who takes an active role in designing an incredible monument that still exists in the center of the park. And then Gilmore Clark, who is really one of our great landscape architects at the Parks Department from the WPA 1930s era. And he does a design between 1934 and 36 that's implemented in the park. So he had a hand in it.
Okay.
And then literally in the tail end of its life, the current configuration of the park, we have A.E. Bai, who comes in the 1970s. They were preparing for the bicentennial celebrations, and the Martyrs Memorial in the center of the park factored prominently in that. So they wanted to spruce up the park, so he had a hand on it. He was known for Saratoga horse ranches and famous garden designs and naturalistic designed landscape features. That was his thing. And then the most recent restoration, which the landscape architecture portion of that was done by Linda Lawton, who is one of our very talented landscape architects at the Olmsted Center, which is where we do design and construction for all New York City parks. All 29,000 acres of them. Mm-hmm. And we worked very closely with Linda to conceive of the current plaza configuration in the park when we started the renovation in 2006, and that was completed in 2008. So those are really, that's the genesis of the history. And what's really great is that every single one of those generations, their hand is still visible in the park. All six eras of
design.
That's
interesting. They didn't wipe clean like sometimes they do. They just start over.
It's a treasure. It's 30 acres in size, a little over 30 acres, and it's just a gorgeous park. And I just love the whole background, the history.
Well, everybody respects the background and the history, and I think that's why it has retained its design elements. It hasn't been leveled and recreated. It is a Revolutionary War site.
Correct.
That's when it was built, and it was named Fort Putnam.
Originally, yes.
But what is the origin of the current name? And tell us about Fort Putnam.
Like. Sure. Fort Putnam was built in preparation for the Revolutionary War and ultimately was taken over by the British, who, as Brooklynites know, occupied Brooklyn for 7 years.
Mm-hmm. And
so,
Brooklyn?
Absolutely. There's incredible Revolutionary War history that mm-hmm. has occurred throughout Brooklyn. And there wasn't necessarily a great battle that one can point to at this particular location, but it was fortified and named Fort Putnam.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting about this park that's unusual for Brooklyn, which is relatively flat, is that there is a natural hill that occurs in the middle of the park that rises 100 feet. And so it was a logical place to build a fort that had full views of Brooklyn, out to Long Island, the whole of New York Harbor. It was very strategic.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we have it as a New York City park, it makes for an incredible variety of landscape terrain and design moments within the park.
Right. And there's a crypt located in the park, right?
There is. Going back to the Revolutionary War for a moment, the reason why the crypt is there is that the remains of who are called the prison ship martyrs are held mm-hmm. in this crypt. And these were, it's approximated 11,500, mostly men,
mm-hmm.
But there could have been women and children. More research continues to happen on the prison ships, but these martyrs, these Americans, were held in prison ships in Wallabout Bay, which is very close to the Fort Greene Park site, which
right.
is now the Brooklyn Navy Yard.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kept on these ships for a period of 7 years, and thousands of them died. It's really one of the great stories of the Revolutionary War as a whole that not many people realize that that history happened right here in Brooklyn.
Right.
And as the prisoners died, they were buried in shallow graves along the shores of the East River, and eventually those bones washed up for years and years and were collected by local individuals. And eventually, in the early 19th century, it was decided that a memorial should be formed, and a little wood memorial was created down at the Brooklyn Navy Yard where they were held in caskets.
Mm-hmm.
Olmsted and Vaux had the vision to bring those remains when the original memorial was deteriorating into Fort Greene Park. And so that's how they ended up arriving. But first we had to have Walt Whitman.
Yes.
Who created the park.
Yes, yeah. Tell us about that. That's really interesting to me.
Well, you know, Walt Whitman, he's legendary. I just have to say the name and people know who Walt Whitman is.
The original hipster.
Yeah, thank you. He looks like one in those historic photos when he was younger.
Carmen posted a great photo on our Facebook fan page, so go check it out.
So Walt Whitman, I mean, he really was the one who was advocating for a lot of the things we're advocating for now with this whole green movement that we're
going. Naturalistic environments.
Yeah, cleaner air and a better environment. And he lived very close to the park on Myrtle Avenue, and he was advocating for Brooklyn to have its own park. You know, Brooklyn's a village in 1830. And with every decade that passed, the population was more than doubling. And mm-hmm. so they needed parks. Mm-hmm. And then Brooklyn Village becomes the city of Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then in consolidation, it becomes part of larger New York.
Yes. Yeah.
So, but Walt Whitman is one who really advocated for a park. And ultimately, through articles that he wrote in the Brooklyn Eagle,
mm-hmm.
And through just public pressure, a park is established, and Fort Greene becomes Brooklyn's first park in 1850.
And the green part, because it's a green with an E, right?
It is green, but the green with an E is for Nathaniel Greene.
Oh, okay. I was wondering who it was named for.
Who was during the Revolutionary War was involved with designing the original Fort Putnam. He was a commander and a war hero, and had involvement with designing that fort. And so ultimately the neighborhood is named for him, as well as ultimately the park. But the park's original name was Washington Park, which is why one street on one side of the park
Washington.
Is Washington Park. Yeah. But today Washington Park in Brooklyn is actually the former J.J. Byrne Park.
Yes.
Which is where the Old Stone House is. You did an episode on that last year.
Yeah, exactly. And the Old Stone House is actually the site of the Battle of Brooklyn, where George Washington came into this Dutch farmhouse, the old stone house, and there was a very ugly, bloody battle that occurred on this farm. And it's that's a whole other story, but it's just very interesting how Brooklyn actually holds so much horticulture history, and mm-hmm. actually, and that's why the Parks Department is now the owner of such landscapes.
Well, yeah. It's very interesting too that so much of Brooklyn was Dutch. People don't think about it as being a Revolutionary War. Right. Being important in the Revolutionary War.
Right. Everybody thinks of Boston and Washington and, you know, but, you know, New York was really the center of life, right. City life. So,
well, the Battle of Long Island, we got chased out a little early in the game, but held our own later on the continent.
right, exactly.
So, it was 7 years that the British occupied Brooklyn. And that all of those prisoners were being held in these really dank, horrible conditions, packed solid, no light, below deck. Where you hear cruel stories about war these days. This is as cruel as any of them. And so this is why it's an important story that needs to be told. And the monument itself actually speaks to the prominence and importance of their sacrifice.
Right.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that, because that was just restored, right?
Well, we actually have to take a break.
Oh, okay.
Hang on. We'll come back and we'll talk about all the designers and all of their significant designs within the park.
To be continued.
To be continued. Very fitting song for a very fitting discussion today. We're talking with John Krawchuk from the New York City Parks Department, who was the overseer of the park restoration, Fort Greene Park. And we're going to get right back into it. Let's talk about, you mentioned a lot of designers that have been instrumental in the design of this park. So let's talk about significantly what were their design trends, if you will, and ideas associated with the park.
Sure. So we originally start, park is established in 1850 and is immediately landscaped according to the principles of Alexander Jackson Downing, who at the time was quite well known in the United States for his naturalistic pastoral designs, mm-hmm. Often related to country houses.
Capability Brown.
Exactly,
era.
Modeled on that. Brought that here to the United States. You have curving paths and soft plantings and, sort of a naturalistic feel to the landscape. And so that's the initial vision that's established for the park. It's planted and immediately trampled and becomes a big dirt bowl. it was a wildly popular park. And parks
sounds like my I hate to interject, but that's exactly what happened when my neighborhood park was restored, John.
Well, we try to work on that at parks.
Yeah.
But that's the necessity of parks in urban life.
It just shows how much it's needed.
Yeah.
Well, we try to do these days, you know, irrigation and put fences up till things establish, and hopefully that is happening. We've gotten a lot better at that. But
that woman with her parasol just keeps banging into me.
Well, and those were real issues because parks, you have to remember, were relatively new at that time in 1850. We didn't have a lot of experience managing parks, certainly not in Brooklyn because this is their first park.
Right.
And a lot of the people living in Brooklyn are immigrants and they want to recreate, have fresh air. There was a very large Irish population that surrounded this neighborhood, relatively poor. And so these places were real areas of escape from them,
right?
From what was rapidly becoming a very industrialized city.
With a lot of disease and
absolutely,
you know, sanitary conditions. And right.
Definitely. And, you know, people just, you know, there wasn't the necessarily the funds to fence things off, et cetera. So people just, you know, used the park.
Right.
It didn't last long, which is the reason why ultimately Olmsted and Vaux are brought in to refurbish it in their design through a competition. They're awarded a design in They work on it from 1867 to 68. So then we have their era of the park, which continues with the naturalistic look, but adds some formal elements. There's a little more money, or a lot more money. This is when the remains of the martyrs are actually brought into the park from the Brooklyn Navy Yard, where they were held in a wood-style monument that was deteriorating. And they designed this incredible double flight of stairs that went up to the top of the hill to a saluting battery. A lot of the spaces that were designed for public parks often related to military parades, and so this accommodated that. For the right reasons as well, there weren't these great views out to New York Harbor and Wallabout Bay where these martyrs had been kept and died. So that was an important element. And this incredible flight of stairs, you know, kind of wound its way up the hill, the 100-foot high hill, to a small gazebo that was cruciform shaped. And the backside of the park, which goes over to DeKalb, is more naturalistic with winding paths, tree plantings, meadows, shrubs, those types of features. Olmsted and Vaux originally envisioned a more elaborate crypt, very similar, if you know, Greenwood Cemetery.
Right, a Gothic style.
The Gothic gates there.
Right.
They wanted something really elaborate that did justice to this sacrifice and didn't have the money. As you know, often happens, you have to phase things, and it never happened.
Right.
So then
it's a beautiful design.
Oh, it's a gorgeous design, and elements of it are still visible. Some of my favorite trees. This is a park to go see trees.
Yeah.
Really, there are some great specimen trees. My favorite one is 62 inches in diameter at the top of the hill. So you should go check it out. It's a London plane tree, Platanus. And it's 62 inches in diameter.
That's my height.
And so imagine that in, you know, width for a tree.
Right.
It's near the comfort station. So anyone going up to see the beautiful McKim Mead and White comfort station at the top of the hill, look straight towards the monument and you'll see this beautiful tree in front of you. That's it.
Okay.
And there are other great trees in the park. Hopefully we'll get to that a little later.
And looking at the drawing, John, there's separate playgrounds for boys and girls?
Well, in Olmsted and Vaux, yes. And that was a common theme throughout many of our early parks to separate the play, because they had different activities at that era and different energy levels and all the rest of it. And there would have been schools probably coming over here and using them as well.
Right. That makes sense.
So they would have separated the play. But yeah, Olmsted and Vaux, that's their era.
Okay.
Then in 1905, another competition is held because, you know, the American martyrs were very close to people's hearts and minds.
Right.
And they still felt that a proper memorial needed to be constructed. So a competition is held. Some really great architects enter it. Carrere and Hastings, the designers of the New York Public Library, enter it. McKim, Mead, and White, who also, you know, were great architects here in New York and throughout the Northeast, ultimately are awarded that design. And in 1905, they start work on it. In 1906, Stamford White is murdered. And it's said, I've read this in a book, that he was actually working on the Fort Greene Martyrs Memorial the night that he went, you know, stopped work, went up to Madison Garden, and was shot dead by Harry Thaw.
Ah.
So it was that whole scandalous era in 1906, Evelyn Nesbitt, and the scandal that surrounded that. But this is the when you say it's his last public work, it literally was the last thing he worked on his desk before heading out that night.
Right.
Wow.
And it's an incredible monument. It's 149 feet in height. It's a Doric fluted column made of Newport white granite. And he never got to see it realized, Stamford White, that is. But it was constructed between 1906 and 1908 and dedicated by President-elect Taft, who actually came in for the ceremonies. The entire column was draped in an American flag bunting and dropped.
Oh, wow.
Very dramatic. And McKim, Mead, and White, I'd like to say they completely changed it. Their design made a huge imprint on the park. You were commenting earlier, Alice, about the stairs.
The stairs that lead up, and I want our listeners to go to the Fort Greene Park website and also Parks Department. Do you have archive photos on your
we do.
Website?
Yeah.
Okay.
Enter Fort Greene with an E park.
Okay. Yeah.
And you'll get lots of information off the park's website.
And you'll see all the reiterations of the design. And The original design was these stairs flanking up this hill, but there was land in between the two staircases.
Correct.
And it was Stanford White's firm that actually linked, they took away the land and linked these stairs together. So now it's just this huge platform. Is that right? Right?
You think Rocky had a challenge down in Philadelphia running upstairs. Come run up these stairs.
This
at
is
Fort
Brooklyn,
Green.
Baby. Yeah.
You got it.
Well, I bet people do, right?
Yeah.
I bet
it's, oh, I not was just out there today.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There were, it's good exercise. You don't need Stairmaster at the gym.
No,
go run
no.
the stairs at Fort Greene. No, it's a great, it's an incredible flight of stairs. Imagine a stair tread 100 feet in length as you're ascending it and going up.
Times 100 feet.
Almost 100 feet.
In height. Right.
There are landings, so there are opportunities to rest, but it is an incredible flight of stairs and not to be missed as far as just the drama of a Beaux-Arts design in a New York City park.
To me, it's very imposing if we're going to be design, you know, critiques. To me, it's too much. I prefer the left and the right and the center landscaping.
But. Yeah, and I, it was McKimmied and White, and so they were all about, often their designs weren't necessarily, they were always executed very, very well as far as the materials and the attention to detail. This particular one, though, has a great dramatic effect, and I have a feeling that the reason for that had to do with the actual event that it was commemorating, which was the prison ship martyrs, that maybe he really wanted people to know
labor
what happened.
And labor, to this memorial. Yeah.
So you basically have this 100-foot-high granite column, and then you've got a granite plinth at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the very top, there's a 25-foot-tall funerary bronze urn that is designed by Adolf Weinmann, who was a very well-known artist at the time. McKim, Mead, and White used them a lot. It's speculated they designed the eagles at the plaza level as well. And this plaza at the bottom, or I should say, the plaza at the top of the staircase, when you get there, measures 220 feet by 220 feet. Talk about also, you know, making a statement. And they originally had a brick-banded plaza design, which was removed at some point, probably by A.E. Bai in the 1970s. He made it grass because A.E. Bai was all about nature.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want paving. He wanted grass.
Right.
We brought that back, though, in 2008, designed by Linda Lawton, one of our Parks Department landscape architects. And she did a great job redesigning. It's a McKim, Mead, and White style plaza with granolithic concrete and brick banding. But we had to take in account the trees that are over 150 years old and give them space for their roots to grow.
Yeah, right. You don't want to cover that up with...
Yeah. So the plaza, it's quite lovely. It allows for events to happen up there, and it's a wonderful way to acknowledge the memorial's original design.
And you can go into the column? Is that right, John? Can you...
I can go into the column.
Okay. Because I'm looking at the cross section. There are stairs.
Correct.
Right,
that's
okay.
Correct,
but it's not open to the public.
Unfortunately not. Now, when it was originally designed, it was meant to be open to the public. And the capital of the Doric column is actually a viewing platform, which is pretty dramatic views of the city from up there.
Yeah.
Now, I've heard there's an eternal flame.
Well, there was.
Okay.
And now it is lit by a fiber optic light.
Okay.
Welcome technology.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're trying to save electricity.
Yeah,
it's fiber optic, low energy. You're correct, Alice, that there was an eternal flame as part of the 1905 design.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a gas flame that shot out the top. And it's interesting that it was dismantled, we believe, in the 1940s when the FAA came into being for flight regulations. So maybe it had something to do with that. I don't know. But in the redesign in 2008, we did light the entire monument and put a fiber optic light to light the bronze flame at the top of the
arm. It's fascinating. You know, you're talking about all these different designers, all these different visions, and yet the cohesiveness and the respect for the origin of the park. But how fascinating for you as a contemporary designer, historian, preservationist, to really look at all of these elements and put together what you all think is the most interesting and, you know, improve them, make changes. Like, what a fascinating job that you all have.
Well, I feel like I'm the luckiest person in the world because of the job that I have at New York City Parks. I mean,
right.
It's really being the director of preservation and being able to really have a hand in preserving this great history, which, you know, the park system just keeps getting older and older, which is pretty good for job security. I have a lot of work ahead of me to do. But I really do feel honored being having these treasures placed, you know, before me and, you know, to restore for the public.
Right. I mean, not to get too Ayn Rand on you, but, you know. But tell us about the some of the decisions that were made, design decisions on the park.
For Fort Greene Park, so for instance, I talked about the plaza earlier. We took a very close look at what had been taken away. That's often what you do in preservation. You look at what was the original design. You look at plans, photographs. Luckily, Robert Moses photographed everything when he became commissioner in 1934. So we had have an incredible photo archive at the Parks Department from the 1930s on. And we looked closely at that and said, what's missing and what should we bring back? How will that help the community? The community had expressed concerns about wanting to do events up there, but they were always, you know, having to deal with mud and, you know, grass that was difficult to navigate and manage, and they really felt, you know, they wanted the paving back, so we brought it back for them. There were other things that were more controversial, like the Ginkgo Grove at the top of the hill. It was, you know, installed by, designed by Gilmore Clark, who was a very famous landscape architect in the 1930s WPA era, and his signature landscape were these alleys of trees. So he did the alleys of the Platanus cerifolia. He did the alleys of the Ginkgo bilobas that are at the top. And some people felt they were respectful of the McKimmian and White monument design, and they felt it should be removed. So, you know, those are some of the challenges. We ultimately ended up saying that those are important elements from another era of designer's era, and that they're worthy of keeping, in addition to the fact that the trees provide an incredible benefit to
us. Right. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. So you've said that the park is of national importance. Is it a national historic treasure? What's this, like, statehood of that?
The park is a local New York City. It's within a local New York City landmark historic district. The park is also within a national register, which is of
it's on the register.
State and national importance.
Okay.
And there has been desire to list it as NHL, which stands for National Historic Landmark. That's the highest level of listing that you can get. And with that come all kinds of benefits, not only the prestige of being a National Historic Landmark, but potential grant funding and other monies.
Right. Because so, it will continue to need preservation and protection.
Oh, yeah. We've only restored the monument, the, you know, the Martyrs Memorial, which is in the center of the park. The whole rest of the park now needs to be tackled. We've got erosion control issues. All of the retaining walls need to be restored. The perimeter sidewalks is a big focus of ours right now. So there's lots of work to do. And luckily, we partner with the Fort Greene Park Conservancy, which has really been an incredible group to work with. They, you know, they're local in the neighborhood, raising money, doing events, advocating for the park every step of the way. And those partnerships are important at New York City Parks.
Extremely, extremely.
And for those of you, we had talked earlier about the website, I should just mention it's www.nyc.parks.gov.
Great.
And so please go on there and you can check out not only Fort Greene Park, but our other great historic
parks. All the other
parks,
good work, yeah. Carmen and I will be posting this website on our fan page
after
Facebook and Twitter. And thank you, John, for joining us today and shedding some light on the eternal flame.
Thank you
so
much. It's really it's been a pleasure.
We didn't read any Walt Whitman poetry, so that's good.
I'll come back. We'll
John,
have a part two.
We would love to have you back. So
because you're working on lots of other interesting things too.
Happy to do that anytime.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We dig plants. Thanks to our sponsor. Thanks to Jack and Carlos for engineering and producing. Thanks to John Krawchuk and the New York City Parks Department. And happy gardening.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.